when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Hello, everyone. Shelby Gallagher here, joined by my co-host and partner for life, Glenn Tate. Good to see you.
Hello, Shelby. You're my wife and stuff.
Yeah, so I get to see you all the time.
Yay.
Yay me.
Yay me.
Winners. So real quick here, we have a really cool topic, and we're really going to drill down on it today. It's normalcy bias and numbing down. But before we get into it, I want to give folks kind of a little quick update on some of the things that are going on in our lives, or we might get the chance to meet you, which is great. For those of you who live in Oregon,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, there you go. Please get out. If you just look at the recent elections and you know the reason why, look at what the headlines, for Pete's sake. There's riots all the time there, and I talk about those a lot on social media. But on January 12th, from 1, I believe it's 1 to 5 p.m., at Beaver Creek Armory. It's in Hillsboro, just west of Portland. Great armory. They have an indoor range. They have a great gun store. I will be hosting a book signing specifically for book 2 of my series. It's been out for a while. But we will have copies of my first book. We'll have copies of Glenn's books. He'll be there with me. And we'll do a book signing, kind of hang out with people at a cool gun store. Here's what's really cool. The opportunity, people who come, they will get to meet the lovely lady. Her name is Hannah. She works there. It's a family-owned business. And she is the inspiration for my character, Ash, in book 1 of my series.
Ash is an amazingly interesting character. A lot of people have said, oh my goodness, is this Ash person real?
I mean,
yes, she's very real and very interesting.
Yes. So you'll get to meet her. She does, and I will say this, she does run a ladies-only gun class out of Beaver Creek Armory, and you could sign up for that or just meet her. She's got some great qualifications. She's a great... That woman knows what she's doing with a firearm. So you're in good hands with her. So that's coming up on January 12th. But Glenn, you have something coming up January 1st.
That's right. Slated for January 1st is the release of the iPhone and Android flashcards, and also the desktop, laptop, and tablet release of the electronic flashcards of PAM, P-A-M radio, which is not ham radio. It is Prepper Amateur Radio, which is a series of flashcards, very easy to read, very easy to learn stuff. It's what you as a prepper need to know, the practical stuff you need to know about ham radio, and none of the stuff you don't. No Morse code, no crazy stuff you don't need. You don't need to know about the ionosphere and talking to Greenland. You don't need any of that because you're a prepper. You don't need to talk to Greenland. What are they going to tell you? Nope. I made that up. That's Eskimo talk. But you don't. So anyway, and it's slated to be released January 1st. Later on at the break in this show, you're going to hear an ad that we put together that describes it more. The reason January 1st was selected is that is New Year's resolution time. And a lot of you guys out there, and by the way, West Coast people here, when we say guys, we mean men and women. A lot of you folks out there have probably said, oh, geez, I really need to learn comms and ham radio, but it's really complicated. And there's that Morse code thing. And I don't know how to speak Eskimo. So I don't know. I got to talk to Greenland or something. Nope.
400, 300 questions to take the silly exam that you'll never remember the answers to, right?
None of that is in the flashcards. It's very practical. I'm here at my house with my family, and there's another family down the road, and that other family can see if a motorcycle gang is going to come into our neighborhood. I need to talk to them. How do I do that? What's the equipment that I need, you know, on a budget? How do I get this done? Practical, 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 and all about prepping and none of the stuff you don't need. Very excited about that. So that is what is slated to come up January 1st. We don't have the website up. We're running at the speed of Glenn and Shelby, which means we're doing podcasts. We're doing electronic flashcards. We're writing books. We're being on podcasts. We're having guests on podcasts. We love this life, by the way. We absolutely love it. And so the website is not caught up yet for PAM Radio with the launch, but it'll be out there. Just tuck it away in your head.
Yep,
just
be ready. It. I love that because people have asked me that too. So how are you doing on your comps? I'm like,
That's what Glenn's for.
Glenn's in charge of that. I'm not. Okay, what? No, it's not. We all need to. Seriously, because if you don't have comms, collapse happens. You're on your own. You really are on your own.
And what a classic example comms are of prepping 2.0.
Yes.
You got beans, you got bullets, and now you need to talk to your neighbor to find out if the motorcycle gang is coming.
Yes.
To steal your beans, and you might have to shoot them with the bullets you have. So beans and bullets are only half of this. Knowing that the threat is coming is the second half. And knowing that the threat is coming or not is a perfect segue into what we're talking about today, which is normalcy bias and numbing down.
But before we get there, real quick, I just want to let people know, please go onto our websites. We'll tell you what they are at the very end here. And sign up for our newsletters, because we'll be giving you all the updates on these things too. We send an email once a week, a newsletter, just letting you know what's going on, giving you all the links to all these places and all that sort of a thing. It's how we keep what's going up, going on with you. So yes, normalcy bias and numbing down. Kind of, they're two different things, but they're very related, and we're gonna talk about that today. So, Glenn, what is normalcy bias?
In a nutshell, normalcy bias is the human coping mechanism that all human beings have. More on that in a moment. Where humans, when they're confronted with some potential ugly reality, like a motorcycle gang coming down your road, or some collapse, or some natural disaster, or something, the human mind plays tricks on you to allow you to cope with it. And the way that usually plays out, and what normalcy bias is when your mind says, well, everything's like okay, everything's normal. I mean, it's not like anything bad's gonna happen, and that will get you killed. I'm gonna say that again. That will get you killed. And that's why we're talking about it. This isn't some psychology like college course where we are really interested in how the human mind works. Quite honestly, the only reason I care how the human mind works is so I can know if I'm assessing the information that's coming in a collapse, and I'm making good decisions, and that's all this is about. So that's normalcy bias. And then, and Shelby came up with this and it's brilliant, it's cousin, the common denominator with normalcy bias, which again is your mind coming up with coping mechanisms, is numbing down. We've all heard the term dumbing down, but you coined this, and like you did with some other phrases like sanctuary state that ended up becoming actual phrases, you're coining this one too. And numbing down, in a nutshell, is where we're so used to Antifa rioting, we're so used to, you know, all kinds of organized political violence, we're so used to things that we just think, oh, well, nothing bad is going on because it's just another day. I mean, another block of Portland was burned to the ground. Another congressman or senator or Supreme Court justice was assaulted. Another conservative personality had people come to his door and try to kick it in. Oh, same day, different stuff, right?
Right, it's just another headline.
And that will get you killed.
Because you're numbing yourself to it.
You're not objectively assessing, thank you, information. And you can see how normalcy bias and numbing down are related, because you're basically shrugging off important facts and you're not looking at things clearly. And that is a huge problem. So that's why we picked this topic that, by the way, I've not heard many other people talk about, especially on a podcast. And we, Shelby and I, have the advantage, the honor, the coolness of being able to have described this in our books with our characters. And we're big fans, she and I, of providing information by use of examples. And sometimes, because we're fiction writers and we make stuff up, we will create characters and put them in scenes to illustrate normalcy bias. And we didn't actually talk that much about numbing down in our books, because quite honestly, I wrote my book several years ago and you wrote your books a year or so ago. And things weren't as bad as they are now, so numbing down. But throughout,
we have some great examples that we want to talk through, so that people get an idea of the kind of the spectrum of this.
Exactly. So if you've read the 299 Days book series, or listened to it on audio, or you've read A Great State, and soon to be able to listen to it on audio, we will refer to characters, and you go, "Oh yeah, that's what I meant." Now, if you haven't read or listened to the books, you'll still be able to follow along.
You need to.
Yeah, you need to. Well, you need to read the books, yes, or listen to them. But anyway, so that's what this is, and that's why it's important.
So let me jump in here. I'm going to point out to one of my main characters in my book that I made a normalcy bias person, kind of, and I wanted to. And also, too, this person is extreme. It's in mostly in book two, Ned's. Ned is is kind of the hero of the series. His ex-wife, Barb, she... there's a very poignant scene where she is in an urban environment, and she's watching violence happen all around her, and she's concerned that the ATM isn't working. And she wants to talk about what's happening at the latest garden club party. And she wants to spend an afternoon shopping with her friends.
Because that's normal to her.
That's normal.
And that's soothing.
And she is seeking that which is normal instead of looking around her going, I need to address the awfulness that's happening. That's a version of normalcy bias. So what's a character in your series that you would pick out for that?
Well, I have a couple. And just like you, I had extreme examples of normalcy bias and mild ones. Because, by the way, different people will handle this differently. Yeah. Some people will have extreme reactions and some will have mild ones. And by the way, if you've ever talked to combat veterans, and I am not one, I've never been in the military, they will tell you it's always fascinating to see who freezes up. And in a way, normalcy bias is like freezing up in combat. And who freezes up and who doesn't. And it always surprises
you. They think that the person you think will be the toughest and able to handle that kind of stress doesn't. And on the flip side of that, the person you think is the weakest psychologically handles it. It's amazing.
Amazing. And we want you, preppers, when you're confronted with dangerous, bad things, to be that calm person who's just like, well, time to get to work, and you go and do what needs to be done instead of flipping out.
Especially if you know this about yourself. If you're sitting here going, ask yourself, am I having a normalcy bias moment here? I need to, and assess yourself. Yeah, so go ahead.
Exactly. Stop and look around. And see, this is the cool thing about listening to this podcast, is that you're going to know that it exists. Mm-hmm. You're going to know when you're sitting there and the motorcycle gang's coming down the road, and if you're starting to think, I'd really like to eat some Fruit Loops right now, I think that would be delicious, yeah, that your mind is goofing with you, and that you can say, stop it, mind. Anyway, back to your question about a character with, and I'll go with the first example of extreme normalcy bias. As the neighborhood is falling apart in book one of my series, the team is in a neighborhood. They're in Powell's neighborhood, and there's smoke, there's sirens. There have been sirens for 3 days because everything's fallen apart. Law and order is gone. And, you can hear gunfire all the time. It's that bad situation that we all prep for. And as that is happening, Powell's neighbor is just completely checked out of this situation. He's unprepared. And that's what drives a lot of normalcy bias. People who are unprepared can't start to think about what's going on because their mind will say, well, it would have been great if you would have prepped.
Exactly, right? Right.
And then the rest of their mind goes, oh, geez, I made a huge mistake and now I'm going to die or suffer.
Because that's what I think will happen. If you aren't prepared and there is a disaster happening for me, I'm unprepared. Now the next thing that you have to accept, this is where normalcy bias, I think, comes in. And I'm not a psychologist. I'm going to die. And that's a hard pill to swallow. That's why we prep.
And people are going to say, I'm about to die. And here's the worst part, is if it could get worse. And I could have avoided this.
But I
wanted to play Pokemon, and I wanted to drink wine, and I wanted to watch football, all the time, every day. And I didn't do what my neighbor was doing. So there's a lot of guilt and resentment and what ifs. So back to my character, and he's not a big character in the book, but boy, this example in the book, a lot of readers have told me, wow, this really resonated with me because I could see this happening. And some of them said, like, this could be like my uncle. I could really see him doing this. So he's this guy, completely unprepared, and his mind checks him out of the situation he takes his 69 Mustang, his cherished classic car, and he just starts washing it.
Yeah.
And he's washing it into the night. He's washing it several times. He's detailing it. And as he's sitting there scrubbing his car and muttering to himself about all the good times, all the good road trips he had in this, and all the things he was going to do. He's talking to himself. He's delusional. I mean, yeah. he's really psychologically weak and checked out at this point. The gunfire is getting closer and closer, and he ends up dying. So I wasn't kidding when I said this normalcy bias thing can get you killed, because if your brain tells you that you're not going to react the way you need to react, then you won't, and you will die. So there's an extreme example of normalcy bias, which is different than the Barbara example that you described, which is things are falling apart, maybe not as violently as the situation I described, and somebody's thinking about the gardening club because that's soothing. See right. how this goes in degrees?
Your mind is going to go to that which is more comfortable.
And a third example, so we've gone the extreme example of the 69 Mustang, got the medium example of the gardening club. And another way that normalcy bias plays out, and this doesn't get you killed, by the way, and this is the okay normalcy bias to have, because as Shelby said earlier, everybody has normalcy bias.
I know, I think we, yeah.
Everybody does. So if you're going to have this psychological effect, it might as well be harmless, right? And here's the harmless way it plays out. In my books, the main character, and that's me, by the way, autobiographical, all that other stuff, his mother-in-law really, really loves to have a cup of tea in the afternoon. And she's been having a cup of tea in the afternoon for years and years and years. She's squared away. She knows that the situation is dire. She's alert, but she craves this cup of tea. And it's not because it's a cup of tea. She craves the normalcy.
It's a dose of normal in the middle of the chaos.
And it's soothing. And she goes to some lengths to get some tea. Now, she doesn't do anything crazy, but she makes it a high priority for the team that's going to go into town and risk their lives. And they're getting a bunch of like medical supplies and really important stuff. She pleads with them, please, could you get me some tea? I really need some tea. And they say, we'll do what we can. It turns out that it works out. So there's a good spectrum of all the ways that normalcy bias affects people in a grid down without rule of law situation.
Well, and those are examples from our books. They're fictionalized versions. We also see it in real life. So here's the thing that I think is interesting is that let's go back to, and I think I mentioned this earlier, the Ferguson riots.
Yes.
I put out on social media, gosh, it's been a year or two ago. Maybe I'll go back and dig it up. This woman's diary.
She's in Ferguson.
She's in Ferguson during those violent riots. And that was like, 4 years ago. It was a while ago now. It seems like it was just last year. And that was the first time, those are riots. Now, here's the thing. This is for our next segment, numbing down. Here's the thing, riots happen all the time now. So we're kind of numb to it, right?
Yawn.
But when the Ferguson riots were happening, they were shocking to see happen. And she lived in Ferguson, and it's her diary of her inner conversation with herself about, the riots, they're marching one block away. So we'll just lock up the doors at night. The kids can still go to school, I think. And some of the neighbors are moving out and going and staying with family in other cities far away. And it's this whole, how unnormal does it need to become before I bug out? I mean, you can feel that inner struggle she's having with her normalcy bias, because if you look out her window, it's a green grass. The shrubs still look the same. Cars are parked in driveways. The place isn't burning down. It's normal, right?
And here's one of the reasons people put themselves through normalcy bias. One of the things they tell themselves, and that is, I don't want to overreact.
Right.
Now, that woman in that setting, and I remember reading the article. It's a fantastic article. I remember her saying, well, I don't want to overreact. I don't want to leave. And then my house is empty and it gets all smashed up. And that's one thing, preppers, you, the listener, preppers, you need to understand that your mind is going to tell you you don't want to overreact. And by the way, you don't want to overreact.
You don't want to overreact. But going and staying with family for a week while there's riots going on, that's, yes, give yourself permission to do that. Give yourself a, you know, bug out for a week or two. I don't know.
And there's some social stigma and there's some embarrassment that goes with being the one who, quote, overreacted, because that's one of the things that non-preppers, of course, we call them grasshoppers here, the story of the ant and the grasshopper. The ant prepped and the grasshopper played and the grasshopper died. So,
and the grasshopper ridiculed the ant.
Ridiculed the ant. That's one of the things that grasshoppers do to us. They're always, you know, oh, you're all freaked out and you're crazy and you're irrational.
Fear-mongering.
And everything like that. Because grasshoppers know they ought to be ants, and the grasshoppers feel guilty, and they feel like idiots. And they're, the Southern phrase is whistling past the graveyard. When you're walking through a graveyard in the middle of the night and you're scared and you know there are no ghosts, but you whistle anyway just to scare off the ghosts, right? That's the phrase, whistling past the graveyard. So anyway, so you've got grasshoppers, and they will either directly tell you you're overreacting as you're making this assessment. And by the way, the great thing about the example of Ferguson is that it could go either way at those initial stages. It may be an overreaction to leave. And it may not be. And so whether that woman who was describing what happened to her, whether she was hearing other people say, don't overreact, or she was hearing her own voice.
Right.
Because she's like, well, if I call my parents, you know, a couple counties away and say, we'd like to come stay with you, is my mom going to say, gee, that
you're
seems
nuts.
Like an overreaction.
Yeah.
So preppers, when your mind tells you, hey, this could be overreacting, listen to your mind.
Yeah.
But listen critically and objectively and really test it with all the facts you can see.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, we'll go on to some other ones, because I love that example. Another one, this is just a real simple one, but again, it's one of those things, people resist prepping, I think, for the same reasons that they resist or that they succumb to normalcy bias. I think they're very similar. My dad, he is Floyd in book one, he's Floyd in all the books of my series, and he's based on my real life dad, but my real life dad is married, remarried, and his wife loaned my book one to a neighbor friend, I have no idea who this person is, who handed it back to her after a week or two and said she got through the first few chapters and said, oh, I can't stand it. I hate all this prepping.
It's scary.
It's scary. All
it's
this
doomsday.
Guns and prepping. It's doomsday. If you read the first few chapters of my book, it really isn't.
Yeah.
So, but because that's how that character develops into a prepper. But it's that whole thing where I wish I could have had a conversation with that person, because I would ask, why is that so offensive to you? And what do you think is going to happen if there is a collapse? And I ask that of people, what would happen if you were in a hurricane? Ask those people in northern Florida right now, who are sleeping in tents in their backyard. There are people from Houston who experienced hurricanes a year ago that are still sleeping in tents in their backyard. Just because they're no longer headlines, these things happen. So I it's a normalcy bias thing. And not only that, and we'll talk about this again with the numbing down thing, but suddenly that which is very abnormal becomes normal too. So I'm getting kind of off in the psychology of it, but can you think of any, Glenn, can you think of any like other real life examples at all?
Other real life examples. Well, we see it every hurricane. I think of Katrina, and there are always the people that stay behind for a hurricane party, right? They're the ones that like, and by the way, Katrina was a real, and there was like a legitimate evacuation order. I mean, you know how the media, that's another problem with all this.
Oh, the media just messes with you and all of
they
this.
They hype it up, you know? I mean, when I lived in Olympia and watched Seattle, you know, local news. By the way, it doesn't snow very much in Seattle. Rains a lot, but it doesn't snow. Every time there'd be snow, it was like storm of the century, blah, blah, and they'd freak, and there'd be dark foreboding music.
And then everybody buys all the water in the local grocery stores. And then they almost create their own panic.
Exactly. But the media will hype things. So there's, but Katrina, it was a legitimate time to go. And there's always some band of, I don't know who they are, I guess people suffering normalcy bias, and they go and have a big party. I remember that. I saw some video. It looked like a pretty rocking party. I mean, I like a good party, but, you know, not when there's a Category 5 hurricane coming in a town built below sea level. That might be a good time to go.
With, like, what, three routes out of town?
Yeah.
Three roads out of town?
Oh, yeah, all of which were flooded
clogged.
At the time.
Yeah.
And so there's an example of it. So it is something. It gets people killed, and it can be avoided if you just know it exists and you test yourself, you test your mind and you test your emotions by looking at the evidence and knowing that this is something your mind is doing, and then you're going to be able to make a lot better decisions.
The other thing I want to bring up in this too is that it is we talked about this a little bit, it is a coping mechanism. It's a way for your mind to get its head, literally your head wrapped around that which you're seeing in front of you. It can kill you. And one thing I want to bring up with this, as well as numbing down, how will our opposition use it against us?
Perfectly good question. So our opposition, I presume to be a corrupt government that wants to hold things together. They want to stay in power, and they don't want people freaking out and moving around and overthrowing the government or whatever they're concerned about. And so they're going to use normalcy bias to control people and to have people not react. They're going to say to people, it's not a big deal. By the way, the media, I think, is a willing...
Willing participant.
And you won't see news coverage of bad things because the government will say to the media, if you show all this mayhem, people are going to flip out and they're going to start, you know, leaving the cities and they're going to be refugees and we're not going to be able to control it and this blah, blah, blah. And there might be some truth to that, by the way. But the media will be a partner with the government and it'll be everything's normal. I remember this a couple years ago when Venezuela was having really serious riots. Now it's just kind of simmering.
Now it's just collapsed.
A puddle is just, of badness.
Oh my gosh. Now. The refugee crisis now out of there. Yeah.
But when there was a lot of rioting and military clashes, light military clashes, I remember this news story and it said, why don't you take a look at what is on Venezuelan TV right now? Mm-hmm. Real time as this is happening. It was like a cooking show. It was like their version of the Today Show with like celebrities, and they were all making their favorite whatever souffles
frittata.
Or something. Yeah, I mean, we don't know. And as Caracas was burning, and people were dying,
and
the
starving.
Government, mm-hmm. the government slash media, were letting everybody know that everything's cool and everything's normal, so that people won't mobilize, so people won't be preppers, people won't act on their own. People won't be self-reliant. The government wants to control you that way. That's not a conspiracy theory. All governments do it. It's just the way it is. So that is how our opposition will use this, because in take the example of the government, they can't control a mass of refugees, so they want to lessen that, and they want you to stay in the cities. The other thing is the government has normalcy bias too. They're
yes.
probably thinking, hey, we can totally handle this.
This
are you
is a
kidding
riot.
Me?
We just need to simmer this down. Next week we'll be fine. Don't
Everything
worry about it.
Everything will be
it.
Cool. No yeah. need to overreact.
Right.
Right. And that's right. the common thing. So we're running out of time here on segment one. I think we're going to drop this off. But I think, Shelby, this has been a great explanation of normalcy bias and why it matters. We said, hey, we're just going to talk about this. And quite honestly, this has turned out to be like way better than I even thought it would.
Yeah. And it really helps you kind of search your mind a little bit and know your own weaknesses in this. So don't go away, because we have the other half of this numbing down after the break. See you on the other side.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
Prepper Press is a small, independent publisher of survival nonfiction and post-apocalyptic fiction. At PrepperPress.com, you'll find a variety of books to guide you on your journey to prepare for a compromise to the electrical grid, natural disasters, economic collapse, political strife, or similar scenarios that could disrupt life as we know it. You'll also discover fictional yet believable stories about what happens to society when everything falls apart. To learn more, visit Prepper Press online at PrepperPress.com.
All right, preppers, we'd like to take this moment and recognize some of our great sponsors. So let's see, looks like this segment is available. Yep, this space is available for you. It's reserved for a patriot, prepper, freedom-loving company who has a product that would interest our listeners and would be proud to partner with us. To reserve your ad space, contact Shelby Gallagher at shelbygallagher321@gmail.com. That's shelbygallagher321@gmail.com.
The Operator G1 is a full-featured rugged comm solution designed for the Midland MXT 100 and 105. Designed and manufactured in the USA, the Operator is an all-in-one support platform for two-way wireless communication for civilians. Using the GMRS bands, there is no ham license required and no test needed for operation. Ideal for preppers, hunters, homesteaders, ranchers, and people just like you. Waterproof when closed, this rugged system houses the Midland radio, microphone, and antenna, providing an always-ready, always-charged grab-and-go solution for emergencies or events, as well as an ideal solution for a base station or vehicle use. Powered by a 60 Ah internal battery, the operator recharges quickly and easily using the supplied AC charger, the internal solar controller, or directly from a vehicle. If you recognize the value of wireless communication with or without grid power, the Operator G1 is an award-winning solution that allows simple, one-button communication when it counts. Our two-year warranty, quality materials, and first-class assembly technicians deliver a high-value solution when you need to be sure you can get your comms up. To learn more, go online to portableuniversalpower.com.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome back, everyone. Shelby Gallagher here with the second
half. And Glenn Tate. Let's not forget Glenn Tate.
I'm standing
right here. How did you not see me?
Glenn Tate's here, everyone. Glenn Tate's in the house. Woo, woo, woo. So with the second half of this show, this has been fascinating, and I knew it would be. We first talked about normalcy bias and how your brain will want to tend towards that which is normal when something horrific is happening in front of you. And we gave some examples of that. The next one is numbing down. And the best, Glenn has got the best example of this. And I want to talk about this a lot because I think we, all of us are experiencing this right now in the time that we're in and this moment in time that we're in. But you have the best example, and I think it's great. Go for it.
A very good friend of mine, and he didn't say I could say who it is, so I won't. Some of you know him. He's a podcaster. He basically unplugged. He was working a night shift, and he quit using his smartphone, and he just went to a flip phone, which I didn't know that they exist.
They make those.
Apparently
so.
Who knew? Yeah. So he was unplugged from social media.
News feeds.
He didn't listen or watch the news. He was just driving at night.
He was just taking phone calls with his phone.
He's just taking phone calls with his phone. And so he started that in about June, the beginning of the summer. And then he called me a couple weeks ago, right after the Kavanaugh nomination hearing vote
fiasco.
Debacle. And he said, Glenn, what is going on? He was stunned. And he described this, and we're going to hopefully have him on the show, and he can put it in his own words. He said, what happened to my country
in 2 months,
in the past couple months? This is crazy. And I hadn't really thought about it. This is numbing down. I was a problem. I succumbed to numbing down. And he said, so when I was watching the news, you know, XYZ was the big issue, and they were little teeny issues that I can't even remember, but that's the point. They were nothing. And then he said, what's this about this guy? And there's no evidence, and they're trying to do all this, and they've got all these people who are obviously lying, accusing him of doing terrible things. And I understand that, like, all these crazy progressives are literally banging on the door of the Supreme Court trying to get in while he's being sworn in.
That was so skirted over in the news. The violence that was happening in D.C. over this. There was violence.
Exactly. And he had, and now Justice Kavanaugh had, you know, a multitude of death threats. His family was threatened. And, you know, the legislators, the senator in the elevator was getting accosted pretty vigorously. Mm-hmm. And this isn't just like debate and sharp words.
No,
this
he's is getting like pushed around, knocked around a little bit. Yeah.
One step away from assault. Mm-hmm. And there was all this contentiousness. And he said, what? And that's when he said, I miss America. And then he said something else funny. He said, Glenn, I hate your books. And I said, why? And he said, because predicted all this stuff.
Yeah.
And what you described and how things fall apart and how bad things can get with this lunatic left-wing group of nut jobs, which are about, I don't know, 50% of the country right now, it seems like. They're probably not. And anyway, so that was a great example of numbing down, because I had been numbed down over the summer. And I was just like, oh, yeah, just another day where this is going on. And I wasn't thinking clearly. I wasn't realizing how bad it really was, because I had been numbed down to the poor conditions. And it took a Rip Van Winkle guy asleep for a couple months, basically, from social media to make me realize how much stuff had changed. See, he had the clear vision of how much the country had changed in a couple months, and I didn't. So I think that's the perfect example of numbing down. And of the two of us, I was at a disadvantage because I was not seeing things clearly. And that's a problem when you're a prepper. You're not seeing the threats rolling over the horizon.
Yeah.
You're not seeing
because it's
them.
Normal.
It's normal. This always happens. And by the way, this is not normal. The summer of 2018, and it's only going to get worse, was not normal.
Nope. So let's use some real life examples here. So we were talking about it in the first segment about how Ferguson, I believe it was 4 years ago, was kind of, that was some crazy 2 weeks, 3 weeks of major violent riots in Ferguson, Missouri. And nothing like that since probably the 60s in terms of those sorts of things. And the looting that came with that, the assaults, the, oh my gosh. Here's the thing. A year ago, the summer of 2000, well, no, let's go all the way back. I talk about this a lot, and this is where my numbing comes in, except I'm fighting it, and I'm trying to keep others from succumbing to the numbing as well. First of all, I use this on social media all the time, and you gave me the idea for this using the hashtag, this is what a collapse looks like. And the reason why I use that is I will take snippets of something from the news and say, this is what a collapse looks like. Don't, in other words, don't let yourself become numb to this. This is collapse material here. So let's go back to election 2016. And I talk about this in my book. I talk about this on other podcasts. I talk about this a lot. In Portland, Oregon, once Trump was elected, there's the whole resist movement started the Friday after Election Day. There was riots for most of Friday afternoon through the night, riots that were violent. It resulted in car dealerships being vandalized to the tune of millions of dollars. It resulted in the I-5 major freeway through Portland getting blocked off by rioters. I'm sorry, not blocked off. I'm sorry. The Portland police stopped traffic so that the rioters could get onto the freeway and do that. That's how you're talking about the police being compliant with that. They were, and that continued. So, and you would think, okay, this is a one-time thing. No, pretty much about at least once a month on average since 2016, if not more often, Antifa has rioted in Portland. Sometimes they're big, sometimes they're little. Some of the things that have happened in some of those riots, well, during that time too, Berkeley had their big, crazy fire-induced, you don't hear about that anymore. They had Milo Yiannopoulos was supposed to speak. People rioted over a speaker. And then right after that, there was another riot in Portland where the same tactics were being used, starting fires, Molotov cocktails being thrown into a Target store, Target meaning like where families go buy diapers and baby clothes, into a store to start it on fire. These are the sorts of things that happen often in Portland. The reason why I make such a big deal about it is because I don't want people to get numb to it. But we have become, we now live in a rioting culture. The mayor of Portland even said that. We now live in a culture of rioting. We must get used to it. The mayor of Portland
says
this.
And I saw that quote. She's not making this up, listener. She's not making this up. And one of the
other— Get used to it, he's saying.
One of the other aspects of numbing down that is troubling is you were describing Portland, Oregon, and everybody out there who's listening to us knows that this stuff happened. Here's my point. Even if you don't live in Portland, Oregon, you think, yeah, this is kind of normal. Let's say you live in Middle Tennessee, far, far away from Portland, Oregon. You're shrugging when you hear about riots and stuff. You're like, yeah, whatever. People in Portland,
they're crazy people.
They're crazy.
Yes, they
in
are.
Berkeley and Seattle and all these places. And you're shrugging and it's no big dealing. And now I grant you, if you live in Middle Tennessee, you don't have probably a big Antifa problem, right?
No.
Because that Antifa problem would be snuffed out in about 42 seconds. So you don't have that problem. But here's why it is a problem for you in Middle Tennessee. If Portland goes full on crazy rioting nut jobby and Berkeley does and Seattle does, it will affect you. There will be troop movements. There'll be disruptions of supplies and all of that other stuff. And one of the things you mentioned about your hashtag, this is what a collapse looks like. I get the sense that a lot of people think you are suggesting that if Antifa throws a Molotov cocktail into a Target store, that somehow is, quote, the collapse. Because in a lot of people's minds, they think, exactly, they think the collapse, and I get where they're coming from, it actually makes sense. The collapse is when the EMP hits. It's when the pandemic kills 75% of the population. That's what a collapse is. Yes, that is what a collapse is. But what does a collapse look like, which is what you say in your hashtag? What it looks like is the police shutting down a freeway to let a bunch of people riot. It is property destruction and all kinds of crazy stuff. Antifa surrounded the building, the federal building where ICE agents were, and didn't let them leave for days.
Yeah.
Didn't let them leave a building.
And the police did not come help.
Yeah.
The local police did not come help federal agents.
Exactly. Who would be killed if they walked out of their building.
Yeah.
And you there, listener, in whatever part of the country you are, you're saying, that's Portland. Well, here's the thing. As I mentioned, it affects you nationally if there are disruptions. The bad things that lead to Antifa doing that in Portland are not that far removed from you, wherever else you are. All it takes is a bunch of like scumbag jerks who are not afraid of any consequences because for whatever reason, the police aren't going to do anything. Now, if you live in a good part of the country, that could be because the police are out doing a bunch of other important stuff, right? If you're in Portland, it's because the police are like, they're fine with it, apparently. Well, the mayor's fine with it, and the mayor tells the police what to do. But you could see this kind of stuff, too. And if you aren't looking for it because you shrug, that's where it's a problem.
Yeah. And that's kind of why I put that out there, because I know that person in Tennessee will go, I want them to be attuned to it. So if it does happen in their community, no. Don't I'm trying to keep your tolerance level low so that you don't allow a mayor to say something as stupid as that. It's going to be honest with you, Mayor Ted Wheeler, that was a stupid thing to say. You're tolerating a riot culture that honestly, I think you would agree with me, someone's really going to get hurt one of these days.
Oh, I can't believe it hasn't happened yet.
Exactly. So that's ways in which we see it, we use Antifa as an example. What's another way? I think another one is what just happened here recently, the threats against news media, conservative news media. I think there's going to be a numbing down of that too.
Yeah. And the thing she's talking about, the most recent example is Tucker Carlson, a Fox News commentator with a pretty big audience.
Yeah.
His house was attacked. He wasn't there. His wife was there alone.
By herself.
Unarmed. Now, this is the District of Columbia where it takes an act of Congress to get a, you know, concealed weapons permit or whatever.
Almost literally.
It kind of does. And so so they came, 20 of them is what I saw from the news report.
And she's hiding in a pantry with her cell phone.
Yep. And they're pounding on the door and screaming that they know where he lives and stuff. And they've got holding up signs with his address, trying to get that on YouTube so other people will come out. They cracked the door is what I read from the news.
They're ramming the door. They're not just, you know, knock, knock, knock. Who's it? Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah.
You know, they're not doing
Land
that.
Land shark. And by the way, Antifa has posted the home addresses of a lot of others. Ann Coulter, I want to say Sean Hannity. Sean Hannity. I can't remember all of them. And
to create the same reaction.
And so that would have been astounding and unheard of.
Six months ago. If your friend that...
Oh, yeah.
If this would have happened in June, I mean, no.
He would have said, I mean, yeah, it's crazy. And this is how fast these things... This is how fast the decline is going and the recklessness and the
lawlessness.
Yes.
I will say this. The left, these Antifa, these extreme left Antifa, there's no rules of engagement.
Oh, no.
And we get used to that on the right. We would never publish our enemies' addresses on social media or, you know, put it out there. They don't have rules. They're like, however we can get under your skin and make you feel afraid.
Exactly. And so that's the numbing down.
Yes.
And that's how you are less able to look clearly at this. And here's how this specifically creates a problem. Shelby, pop quiz. What is the common denominator between normalcy bias and numbing down?
Complacency.
Exactly. Because you, as a prepper, so So when we talked about normalcy bias, it was kind of like mostly grasshoppers and how they do dumb stuff and they don't think that they need to do anything because they're grasshoppers and stuff. Normalcy bias is that. Numbing down is a problem for preppers because you get complacent because Antifa's up to their old tricks again.
Way over there in that city far away.
City far away. And so maybe you're like, well, luckily I don't live in Portland, parentheses, Shelby. Luckily you don't live in Portland anymore because you left.
Yeah.
There's a great example. Stuff, crazy stuff is happening in Portland. What do some people do? They just
leave.
Live with it. Other people get up and make hard decisions and they leave and they relocate. So that's how you need to approach this. Don't let the numbing down make you complacent. Because here's the thing. It's hard work to go and, in your case, pick up stakes, get a divorce, and relocate to a new place and take your family. That's hard to do. Normalcy bias. It is hard work to prepare. So your brain wants to tell you, don't worry about it. And for preppers, that's the numbing down. Now, that doesn't mean you freak out.
Be smart, yeah.
And say, oh my God, there was a riot in right in Antifaville. Sorry, that was actually an honest
That's
mistake.
That's Portland.
Yeah, Portland. There's a riot in Portland. I better...
I'm moving next week. Oh my God, oh my God.
I better set up a minefield, some claymores and barbed wire in my front yard. Obviously, we're not talking about overreacting, but we're talking about being aware and all of that. So I think that's brilliant, by the way. The common denominator between normalcy bias and numbing down is complacency. What is Prepping 2.0, the podcast and the philosophy, all about? Not being complacent. Not being complacent.
And taking it to the next level.
Because, exactly, not being complacent because you've got a couple months of food and an AR-15 and a couple hundred rounds of ammunition. Don't be complacent. 2.0, take it one step higher.
Well, and I will say this. I think Prepping 2.0 and our philosophy behind this show is this is not 2008 or 9 anymore where our concern is what our government's doing. Because right now, I in a lot of ways, I'm not all that concerned about what our government... I'm concerned about what the crazy fascists are doing, to be honest with you.
Yes.
So let me ask this, and this is us looking into our crystal ball here a little bit. This is how I write. Take what we know now. How could we see numbing down happening or things happening that will numb us down more in the future as a prepper?
So are you asking what would be some things that would numb us down, or what does the future look like with this ongoing process of numbing down? The future, in my opinion, with the ongoing process of numbing down means that it just gets worse and worse. And now that all the stuff going on in Portland is going on in, I don't know, Kansas City.
Yeah, I think we're going to see more cities.
And then maybe Ames, Iowa. I'm just keeping going
seriously.
Down sort of the population center level to smaller and smaller. And it doesn't seem that big of a deal. You know, the classic phrase, you know, how do you boil a frog? You know, because you can
jump
out.
A little at a time.
You just increase it 1 degree at a time. And then we, as preppers, no matter where you are in this country, will be more or less, to some degree, surrounded by urban centers full of badness, and you will have not figured out how to get out of there. There's fewer and fewer places
to go
now,
yeah.
And it's harder to get places because maybe you live in an urban center or maybe you have to travel through one, so you are not on the top of your game because you let this badness, this degeneration, this decay creep in and slowly take over more and more territory in the United States. And now you're maybe boxed in. So that's a problem. That is how I see it projecting out into the future.
So I'm going to answer that question too. A couple ways I see it, and I kind of saw it a little bit firsthand. You and I went to a prepping expo in Sandpoint, Idaho in September. And we're meeting some really great...
Oh, yeah.
Sandpoint, Idaho... is just the mecca of prepping. It really is. Amazing people, amazing resources, amazing everything. And talking to people, and we have a lot of one-on-one conversations with people, and I was amazed at how many people from California, I would say within the last year to two, had moved there from California.
And you said, hey, how many people in the audience have come here from California?
Recently.
And
Half.
Recently, yeah. And it was a huge number. This is stunning, but please continue.
And these are not the Berkeley Antifa people. These are
Patriots.
These are good folks. And I was joking when I said this. So I said, if you're a refugee from California, you've moved here recently, raise your hand. So you've moved here from California, or some of us might say you've bugged out of California. And when I said it like that, there was a few eyes that kind of popped open a little bit and went, oh, because we know it's been in the news recently, the population of California is dropping significantly. It became an issue during the election that their voter rolls had dropped quite a bit. So what you're seeing is an exodus out of these cities because people have given up, and you're one of these people. I'm raising my hand on that one. I get it, because there's one person cannot change those kind of problems. So yes, I see the exodus continuing. Read my books. I talk about this very thing. Maybe it's not quite as extreme as in the books, but people are moving out. They're getting away from these urban problems. The other thing I see happening politically that I think we'll see this numbing down, because we're seeing it a little bit with this Tucker Carlson incident. We're also seeing it with that assassination attempt last year on some of those congressmen while they were playing
baseball. Scalise was very seriously injured.
Scalise was injured significantly. God bless him that he's still with us. I think we're going to see, because of these calls to violence, that's the other thing. The left, elected officials on the left, Democrats, left-leaning people, are calling for violence. Here's the thing. These are Democrats. The Cory Bookers, the Maxine Waters, those are some of the ones that I can think of off the top of my head that have called for violence. Not once in his entire tenure that I can recall did Ted Kennedy, when he was a Democrat, call for violence. This is not...
It's new.
It is a very new thing, and we're becoming numb to it. I see the calls to violence continuing, and I see people actually, I think there's going to be more, unfortunately, shooting incidents like what we saw last year with Scalise.
And
we're going to become numb to it.
Yes, much like normalcy bias.
Yes.
I see our opposition using numbing down to their advantage, mm-hmm. and our disadvantage.
So talk about that more. What do you see?
Yeah, I see, and you mentioned, and what made me think of it was Cory Booker and Maxine Waters. Here's how the government... a bad government plays the numbing down. It's no big deal. Hey, you preppers, whatevs. It's not, come on. It's just a couple assassinations.
And why do you think, and I also think that they know that the prepping community is definitely one of the ones that holds on to their Second Amendment rights.
Yes, the like prepping crazy. Community is difficult or impossible to control from the government standpoint. We are the first ones down that highway. And when the highway's clogged and everyone else is trying to leave, we're looking at them in the rearview mirror, mm-hmm. and we're heading to where we need to be. So we are uncontrollable, and they think we're a threat to them. Yeah. I don't think we're a threat. We're not out to hurt people, blah, blah, blah. So they're going to use numbing down to say to us, hey, preppers, don't overreact. Remember, that's the same thing that grasshoppers were saying and that people were feeling with normalcy bias. And so it's normalcy bias sort of targeted on preppers. That's what numbing down is. And that's how our opposition will use it, which, and you know what I'm going to say, listeners, which is why you need to be aware of this and you need to think critically about it, because the second somebody says, it's no biggie, you need to stop and say, is it a biggie or not? By the way, it might not be a big deal. We don't believe in truly overreacting when there's no evidence for it. And so that's how our opposition is going to use numbing down. I don't know that there's a big plot to do that.
No.
I don't believe in conspiracies.
No, I don't think we are going to use numbing down
they'll take advantage of it.
What I do see is kind of this systematic upping their game, upping their threats, upping, you know, it's what kids do. Here's a good example. Antifa in Portland. Let's throw a riot and see what happens. Oh, only a few of us got arrested and we got to spend the night in jail with no charges. Okay, let's do it again.
Yeah.
Right? Because Portland police have a catch and release policy, basically. And that's why Antifa can exist there, because if Antifa had tried that, I don't know, Knoxville, Tennessee, they'd still be in jail right now and they'd be paying fines and serving time. That's exactly. Why, and exactly. So these sorts of groups will find those places where they can take advantage of the lax laws, the lax police, and I think there's going to be a breaking point where they also realize we've overtaken those cities. Now let's go to those secondary cities where they don't have the great laws, and some of us will just take one for the team and spend some time in jail. I think there's going to be some of that. But each one of those things is the pushing of the envelope a little bit further, and we just get a little bit more used to it, and we just get a little bit more used to it. And then we sit there and go, is this normal? Is this right? No, it is not normal to throw a Molotov cocktail into a crowded store full of young families. That is not normal, ever.
Ever. And here's the thing, preppers out there listening to this, your reaction to the escalating badness, to the numbing down, should be to amp up your preps.
Yeah.
The threat is getting bigger. The pot that the frog is in is getting warmer.
A little bit warmer.
And warmer and warmer. And so that's how you need to react to it. And prepping 2.0 is what that's all about. It's beefing up your water, beefing up your comms. Talk about night vision, which everyone thinks is too expensive, but it's not. I mean, it's all those sorts of things. And a million other things, yeah. By the way. Those are just three sort of topics. But that's how you should react to numbing down. And the opposite of what you ought to do is complacency.
And I will throw this into this too. We talk about how those and keep on, you and I have lived on both sides. We've lived in the high density urban environment. We now live out in the country. I know, because I've met them here in our community. Oh, Portland, it's far away. It's not going to affect Seattle. It's far away. It's not going to affect us. Here's the thing, though. When there really is if and when there really is a major event that causes a collapse, I don't think it'll be an event, but there's going to be an exodus.
Yes, thank you.
You are going to have that, your millennial niece who goes to school at Portland State University right in the middle of the riots, who needs to escape somewhere, and she's going to, or your nephew with the man bun, and they're going to come to your door because they know you live far away in the country safe, and they're going to be traumatized. They could possibly be injured. They're going to be scared, and they're going to want help, and they're going to come to you assuming that they're going to get it.
And this is why numbing down matters.
Yes.
Because if you're complacent and then all of a sudden, knock, 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 it's your niece, that's something you didn't plan for.
Yeah.
Preppers are planners.
Yes.
And we need to plan for things, and we need to understand that threat is rolling along. Well, we have about 2 minutes to close out this show. Do you have anything to tell folks?
I do. First of all, I hope this has been good for you and just to help get your mind wrapped around it, especially as we continue to watch just news feeds kind of every day. You're kind of like, oh my gosh, what's going on? But I do want to give our contact information so that people can come find us. Your website, where you can see all about Glenn Tate and all the things that he does, is 299days.com. Just Google 299days. Encourage you to go there and sign up to get on your newsletter, and then also launch from there onto social media. My website is agreatstate.com. Some great little things on there, some of the great book signings and things coming up. Again, launch off of there and sign up for the newsletter and find us on social media. And then soon, I'll say this, soon, but don't go there now, we'll have a PAM Radio website. Don't even go there. Right?
Yeah, it's not. It doesn't exist yet. Don't even look for it.
And don't even look for the website to our show, Prepping 2.0. It's actually going to be Prepping 2-0 because you can't do that on an HTML or URL. Excuse me.
Because we're operating at the speed of Glenn and Shelby, and we're recording podcasts before we even have websites to put them on. But we are on KYAH in Utah, which is great because if you don't live in Utah, there's a link and it'll be somewhere in show notes or something. You can find it. You can go on the KYAH website and find it so you can hear us there. And you can find us a lot of places. By the time this is up, those places will actually exist.
And thank you to our partners at Contra Radio, John Jeffers, who helped us get this up and going. We'll be linked with him somehow in all of this. And those are all links that we have to kind of get put together. Infrastructure is still in place. We're just glad you're here listening to us today.
Exactly right. So we are going to go ahead and say goodbye to everybody. It's that time. And so, Shelby, thank you for helping me understand this topic. I thought I knew it, but I didn't until we spoke today and did this. So everybody, it's Prepping 2.0. This is Glenn Tate signing out.
Be safe, be prepped.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. Find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.